Welcome everybody to the Hockey Think Tank podcast brought to you by thehockeythinktank.com. My name is Topher Scott. You've seen the website. You know the drill. We're getting right into it today. And we have on one side of the ledger a product from Western Michigan University from St. Louis, Missouri. He's standing at 6'2" with some of the best calves that you've ever seen. His hobbies include the gym, protein, creatine, shirtless selfies, and more protein. He's an Italian stallion. He's the co-host of this show. He's Jeff LaVecchio. What's up, Jeff? How are we doing today?
I'm good, brother. That's my second protein shake of the day, and it is 7:15 a.m. Let's get some.
All righty. And on the other side, we have a product from Michigan University Wolverines, and he's hailing from the great city of Detroit, standing at 6'1" with some of the best finishing mitts around the net that you've ever seen. His hobbies include hockey, wrist curls, and that's all the guy ever does. He's obsessed with the game of hockey. He's the man, the myth, the legend, and now repeat guest on the show from the Detroit Red Wings. You ever heard of him? Brendan Nerado. What's up, Nar?
How's it going? Oh, I need to wake up to that intro.
I set that as my alarm.
I'm fired up and ready to go, boys. What's going on in your guys' worlds today?
Go ahead.
Not much, Dolph. Excited to get back on the podcast and talk some hockey with you guys. Just chatting the other day, got some exciting things to talk about. I think it'll be good. Listen to all the other podcasts too. It's like we're just following up on you guys with Hardy the other day. Like it's so funny how everyone that's been on really kind of has the same mentality, but thinks the same way, acts the same way, and just little tweaks in their personality or, you know, their title with or role, you know, whatever team or business they're running. It's pretty interesting to kind of dive into the minds of different people and be educated. It's been awesome, man.
Cool.
Very exciting. Cool. Super, super happy to have you back on, brother. Pretty yeah. excited for this.
Thanks.
Let's get into it. What do we got today, Toski?
Let's get into it. So Jeff and Nara and I have been kind of texting back and forth a bit and with some ideas of what we wanted to talk about on today's episode. And I think one of the things that's really interesting that we wanted to talk about was practice planning. And specifically when you're planning a practice, or not even when you're necessarily planning a practice, but planning a season and you're preparing to teach these kids how to be a part of a team and how to become better as a team and individuals, you know, developing a bit of an identity. And, you know, what do you want to be as a player? What do you want to be as a team? How do you want to project yourself as a coach? And I think that's something that we've even talked about it on the podcast, that I think coaches' preparation for what they're doing with their team is something that not all of us put a ton of stock into. You know, as we talked about even before we got on here, a lot of coaches have 9-to-5 jobs, and you know, they're getting to the rink a half an hour before, and maybe they don't have a lot of time to put some thought into it. But we wanted to talk about today how to best get through kind of those kinds of situations. So Nar, I think you had some thoughts on it. Why don't you start us off here, man?
Okay. No, I just think that, you know, we're on all these kids, and like everyone on the podcast has talked about, like just the life skills and leadership stuff, the mentorship stuff. That's what youth sports is all about. I think you're insane if you put your kid into sports and, you know, hope that you're going to get a return on your investment and a $200,000, you know, scholarship to college or, you know, an NHL contract. You're doing it to, you know, to teach them to meet new people, teach them, you know, how to communicate with peers, with adults, you know, fail, learn from it, fail, and then have success, and just everything that goes with being in a team environment and, you know, giving your best every day, because that feeds into your family life, business, and, you know, everything else. So we're preaching all these things to these kids, like eat right, you know, you got to get in the gym, you got to do your skill development, you got to do all these little pieces to make up the full puzzle of you having success. So going back to the coaches, like if we're preaching that to these guys, then what's our plan? And again, playing devil's advocate, yeah, coaches have 9-to-5 jobs. And I'm just talking about youth hockey right now. You know, some are full-time hockey guys, and that's great if they have that luxury in their life. But like, you have to have a plan, right? So how do we prepare these kids to have success if we're not prepared every single day? And that doesn't mean just practice planning. How can we preach that message to them? right? So if I'm going into a season, I've got my team, here's the type of player I want to recruit because of everything I'm going to talk about next. So say we get those players or most of them, right? This is our style of play, right? Here's the structure. What are the concepts that are important that feed into that style of play based on who we are and what we do? And then how do I develop players to, you know, enhance the skills that go into those concepts, habits, and the team structure, right? And then game by game, how do you make those adjustments? Because there's going to be adjustments. It's not like you write out some outline for the year and you stick to it. Like, you know, how do we keep improving every day? How do we, you know, what are we struggling with? Do we need to spend time on that to fix it? You know, and then how can we throw some outside the box ideas on them when we're having success to keep challenging them? Like, one thing that I really like is, like, you know, bear with me, it's not like you're trying to step on their throat when you're winning, but like when I used to coach the fall teams in the high school, with the high school group in Michigan, like if we're beating a team 5-0, like we're just rolling lines, whatever, you don't want to embarrass people. But at the same time, like, we're not going to stop learning. It's not like, oh, just go play, finish the second half of the game, we're up 5-0. Like, hey, let's try a new faceoff play. If it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. Let's try a new breakout. You know, let's have the D switch in the neutral zone and cross and drop and, you know, go out the weak side of the ice. Or let's have our forwards play defense and our defense play forwards just to get them a different look. You know, but like something outside the box to get these guys thinking and learning a different part of the game. So going back to my whole thing outside of this rant is like, we have to be prepared, but we have to know what we're, you know, what our preparation is going into the season, the skills, the concepts, and the structure. Right. So if I'm going into a practice now, like, I should have my week mapped out. I've got one practice this week and three games. I got three practices this week and one game. We're not prepping for the game so we can win. You're prepping every day for the season. Right.
Yeah.
So how do we get there? Well, if you have a master outline of this is how we want to play, well, now you're breaking it up. So say our, you know, on our breakouts and our neutral zone transition, we want to play fast. Well, what does that mean? Everyone's got buzzwords. Everyone listened to the NHL Network the night before, and some announcer said, I'm going to play fast. You love this one, Toph, right? So what does that mean? So in the drills, we're going to recreate situations that put them in that spot on the ice so that we can play fast. So that when it happens to them in the game, you know, you don't have time to think. The game happens so quickly. So we can just adjust, and it's habitual to what they do every single day. But then now I'm teaching even more on the bench, especially as a youth coach. I probably talk too much, right? Because I want them to understand it. And I want them to have the right thought process of, you know, even if the play didn't work out, you were thinking the right thing. It will, percentage-wise, right? So and then going into the game, how we prepped that week and the 2-3 practices for the game, did we execute? Did we not? And why? So, like, I'm a guy that, like, every time there's a problem, there has to be a solution. And whether you're a business owner or a head coach or whatever, like, you have to put that responsibility on your shoulders. If your team played horrible or your power play's not going, you don't say, well, you know, we got to get some different guys in the power play. Like, you know, the kids just weren't going. They're tired. Well, why? You know, if you're on a bus trip, like, do they go to bed too late because you didn't tell them there was curfew? Did we eat at McDonald's instead of a healthier meal before the game so we could have more energy? You know, like, did you help prep them or educate them on the right choices to make so that they could compete at the highest level when they do? Right. You know, bear with me here, because, like, I got a good relationship, but it's not like we're super tight or anything. But, you know, Mike Hamilton is the head coach of Muskegon in the USHL, and they're having a phenomenal year.
Good dude. Well, Mike Hamilton, good dude.
Yeah. Unreal. Right. And, you know, he coached, you know, a Bantam team the year before, and number one in the country, and they're loaded, whatever. And,
number one in the country. Whoa.
Easy.
Exactly.
No way.
I'll get to that. Cause it's funny. Like, Mike's in that youth hockey world and he's great and he's respected and whatever, but, like, number one in the country, Bantam minor. And, like, you know, everyone's pumping his tires, and Mike knows, like, it's youth hockey. But the whole time, he's prepping for this year, for 5 years from now. He's not looking at, like, God, it's Bantam hockey. Like, I'll wake up, I'll just show up at the rink. Like, he wanted to be a hockey coach because he raised his family and he built his business up. Now he can do probably what he really loves to do and his passion, because he coached youth hockey for 25 years. And I feel like I'm telling his story, but I think it's awesome. that I don't care if you go from the NHL to the USHL or youth hockey to the USHL. It's not where you were before or the path. It's your path. But he's doing something right. Right? They're the best team in the league. Like, how he thinks, how they're developing, like, I'm going off on a tangent of preparation, but like, it's preparation for you as an individual, whether you're a player, a coach, an employee, a business owner. Like, he's the most prepared guy I've ever met in my life. And I don't know him like super well, but just being around him a little bit and how prepared he was, like, for a Bantam team and the itineraries and the travel on the road for youth hockey and the hotels. In my head, when I first saw it, I'm like, why is he so prepared for Bantam hockey? Why does it matter? But if he's coaching in the American League, because the NHL, they have people that do this, but the American League, college hockey assistant, you can vouch for this, Toph, like, you do way more, especially junior hockey. You're doing the budget, you're booking the buses, you're booking the travel, where are we eating, what time, why? Like, he's got that down to a science, and it has nothing to do with coaching ice hockey. But it has everything to do with it. So those are the type of people, sorry, Bex, those are the type of players that have success. It's not, I go shoot 300 pucks a day because I got to make my shot better because I got to make it to the NHL and I got to make all this money. It's, I do it because shooting pucks is fun. And I like scoring goals in practice, and I'm buddies with the goalie, and I give him shit every time I bury a high blocker on him.
Oh, I love that you said that. Love that you said that.
High blocker, not low blocker, right?
Well, you switched on me because you taught me low blocker, so I'm still stuck in that. But I love that you just said that right at the end, because, you know, I've touched on it before, and I know a couple of the kids with AAA Blues are now doing this, where I told them to make practices more fun by making scoring competitions with another guy on the team, or have a competition with the goalie, and if I score more than 5, you owe me a Gatorade. Or if I don't score more than 5, the goalie, I owe the goalie a Gatorade. But I want to touch on something you said in there that really was something that made a lot of sense to me. You said you want the guys to play fast, you know, one of those buzzwords, but you've done it so much in practice in the certain situations that you need to quote unquote play fast that it's habitual, it's habits. So I believe in that like 1,000%. Like I let the head coach, you know, I guess I'd call them systems or whatever, you know, whatever our structure is, I'll say, not systems. And I try and focus on habits with the guys. Like, after you shoot the puck, stop at the crease, you know, always stick pressure, like building those habits. I think that those little habits are so important in practice. And as a coach, we need to make sure that they're doing the right habits so that, like you said, it's habitual in a game. You're not even thinking in that split second when you're coming out of the corner, you know, you're driving the net or you're pulling up and looking for your D-man. Like, it's those habits that have to be worked on over and over and over on the ice, off the ice, everything.
And that's your identity. So habits should be outlined or should be written down in your outline.
As for right? me, as a coach,
that's
my
your style
role.
Of play.
Yeah.
Well, for head coach, and then you're giving that information to your assistant. How about Hastings in Omaha?
Oh, my God.
Toph, this is unbelievable. We had this thing, every flow drill, right, you had to check out. So basically, after you shot the puck, you had to slam on the brakes like there was a rebound and like you're ready to play it out, whether you scored or Lurgy Glove saved it, right? And if you didn't check out, then you had to sprint past out through the blue line. Well, what that taught you is if you missed the net or the rebound kicked out and it's going the other way, you've developed the mentality and the habits of stopping on the puck and sprinting back defensively. It was actually genius. And it was a good conditioning thing.
Yeah.
So the first day I'm back, I tore cartilage in my labrum. I'm out for like 11 weeks. And my first day back, like, strength is my shot, can't skate a lick. And I couldn't even lift the puck. So now I'm just useless. Right? My shoulder's so weak. So my first skate back, I take a shot on that, absolute muffin, and I just swing off and go in the corner. I'm, good to be back, boys. Hastings, he doesn't blow the whistle. He just comes over and absolutely lights me up. First day back.
Welcome back.
Like, coaching the World Juniors right now, and obviously an unbelievable coach, great guy, but like, absolutely, if you don't stop on the puck, like, you'll never remember being in Omaha. I don't give a shit. and I'm like, holy shit, I better start checking out, you know? But like, I'll never forget that. But you know, he cared. It was basically like, who do you think you, like, it's, I didn't think I was something. I literally just forgot. And he knew that. But he's just letting me know, you're not going to forget, kid. like you're not going to forget.
Yeah, he was so detail oriented on the habits. Like every time stick pressure. I mean, you remember when we would watch video. The biggest thing that I feel like I took from him was stick pressure. Like that made me an infinitely better hockey player. As someone who had, you know, slightly limited skills at the higher levels as far as hands and vision. Like what made me able to be good on the penalty kill and stuff and on the forecheck was speed and stick pressure. Every time I went to hit guys when I first came there, stick was in the air. They could still make the play. I'd try and murder them. I was tiny. I'd probably roll off them or fall down. But every practice, every video, it was pause. Lavecchio, where's your stick? You're an idiot. You know, like, not actually that. Like, what are you doing?
No,
stop making the same mistake. And he made me turn it into a habit every single drill, every single practice, every single game. And I honestly think that a little thing like stick pressure is the reason that I was able to play 10 years pro. It was just a habit that got ingrained in me, and I got so good at it that it kind of became like what made me good. And it's so little, but I love that you said habitual and habits, and it's got to be all the time, every day. And we as coaches need to focus on those things and not let those habits slide, because those are the things that are gonna make players good.
And that's the education that comes to the kids. Like when we were playing juniors with Hasty, like video wasn't a standard. Like he was in front of the game because he popped in the, you know, the VHS tape into the VCR. Right? We watched the game from the night before. But like the best thing about him is, I think a lot of coaches, you know, this is the wrong way to do it, and there's like a fine line of a good mix. But like he would also show clips of, you know, you messing up, and you need to be better, right? But you also show clips of great stick pressure.
Yeah.
So that you knew, like, you know, when you're doing it right and what the times were to do it, right? Like, that's how I do everything with the NHL clips. It's just the highest level. So if you need to use, you know, get off the wall in the neutral zone or manipulate the D's feet, whatever, if you have to do that at the NHL level just to have a chance to make a play a second later, imagine if you did it all the time at the youth level or junior level. You're a rock star. You're gonna do it every time. So they need to see, like I was working with just a small group of kids the other day, just having some fun. And you know, I showed them the video. Usually I do it before so that we know what we're working on. I just jumped on the ice with a couple of buddies and just messing around. I wasn't supposed to be out there. I showed them the video after and like, oh my gosh, it makes so much sense. Like of what we're doing on the ice, like how you explained it. Like, this is when you would do it. This is why. And like, it was like, you could just see the wheels turning in their heads of like, this makes sense to me versus the mentality of a kid because of poor coaching of just getting on the ice to get on the ice. Like I had a purpose with what we were doing. We were going to work on one skill, one concept that day and then blend them together. Right. But like they got it, which they should. It's my job to make sure that they do. But like, and it was cool to see the light bulb go off. Like that's one of the cool things about coaching. Right. But like video does that. Positive video does that. Right. And even if it's negative, like if you're trying it and you got the right thought process behind it, it's going to come. Like keep failing forward. So
when you just said blend them together, are you talking about skill progression?
Yeah. Progression. You can right click and type in any synonym you want for progression. You can call it that.
All right. So I'm going to throw a little bit of a wrench into what we're talking about right now. So we talk about building habits. We talk about developing an identity, which is all obviously really, really, really important. But now you said something in your first kind of, we'll call it rant, but it wasn't really a rant, but, and that was trying different things, right? So coaching at the college level, and when you get to the higher levels, you have to be able to make adjustments. You have to be able to find a different way to do things because something, you know, your identity or the way that you're playing in a certain game or maybe against a certain team or at a certain spot in a game, you might have to change some things around, right? So I think kids need to also develop a way to be able to think on the fly, throw something different at them, and they'll be able to go out and execute it. You know, so maybe on, you know, D2D retrievals, usually you talk about gaining the net, but maybe we'll want to get back really quick and get it right up to the wingers. Or just little things like that where you're going to maybe it's a system thing. It's a different forecheck or whatever it may be, because that happens at the higher levels all the time. So what would you say about – and I had a coach, and Jeff, we've talked about it before. I had a Russian coach growing up in Bantam hockey where he would throw different stuff at us all the time. Like, I want you to do this. I want you to do this. All of a sudden, we're playing 5-on-5, and we're beating a team pretty bad. He's going to throw four players out there, and you got to go play with four players. Like, there's times during games where he made us go out there and play without a goalie in a game that was tied. You know, just
That was against my team. You guys were winning 7-0, and he made you play without the goalie.
Yeah, for the whole game, right?
It was, like, literally – I mean, looking back now, I know what he was doing. But, like, as a kid, I was like, oh, my God, this team is so good. They're beating us 7-0 without a goalie.
But either way, so, like, there's other things that, like, he did. Actually, one of the things was crazy. So we played 9 forwards and 6 D in Bantam hockey. And, you know, there would be games where we would play with 2 lines in the first period and 4 D. And the other line and D pair would be off doing dry land. And then in the second period, that line would come out, put their stuff back on. Another line would go off, and they would go do drawings. So we'd basically be playing the whole games with 6 forwards and 4 D. So he made us think outside the box. Like, he made us – we were always doing different stuff. So, like, we had an identity and all that kind of stuff. But how would you suggest coaches go about making sure that kids are able to also, you know, think outside the box during games? Because when you get to the higher levels, you're going to have to do that. You're going to have to make adjustments.
That's really outside the box, man.
Yeah.
With your Russian coach, like, that's crazy. Like not crazy bad or good. It's just – that is crazy outside the box.
Well, what were the results?
There's
got to
be a why, right? Like, why didn't you play – because I don't know. Like, but I'd be interested to hear
Well,
why.
I mean,
like,
part of it was our team was really, really good, right? We won
really
the national
good.
Championship that year. And yeah. Oh my God, we won a national championship. Bantams.
No, but that was awesome.
So, like, part of it was just challenging us, you know? So, like, yeah. We didn't, like, going in and beating teams 7-8-0 wasn't going to do anything for us at all. So, let's do some things outside the box that's going to challenge us to become better. Like, while we're doing dry land, like, we're working on our conditioning. And you're also working on your conditioning because you're only playing 2 lines and, you know, little things like that, like going out there and say, hey, and guys, like, you're going to go out play with only 4 guys right now. Well, that's a lot harder than playing 5-on-5. Now we got to do things differently. And it wasn't like we had 0 systems. So when I say going out there and playing 5-on-4, we were playing 5-on-4, not like we're doing a diamond and we're penalty killing the way everybody penalty kills and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, we were anticipating pucks and we were putting pressure and we wanted the puck to play on offense and little things like that. So a lot of it was just getting us outside of our comfort zone because that was challenging us. And the best part about it was, like, he could – and this goes back to, like, we've talked about it all the time. Like, he could care less if we won a game or not. Like, literally, we played entire games without a goalie. 5-on-5, because we would either beat that team 10-0 or we would beat them 6-5 because they got 5 empty net goals, and now it was a game where we were going to learn something. So it was just like he made us think outside the box, and I thought that was so valuable to our development. Now, could you get away with that nowadays? Probably not. I would love to say yes, but, like, you know, so what would you say? And that's a little bit of an outlier, the stuff that I'm talking about with our team. But what would you say about just general, you know, making sure you're changing things up and teaching kids different things so it's not just like we're doing the same thing and we're only practicing to our identity and we're learning these 5 or 6 things all the time. You know what I mean?
No, for sure. I mean, that you're just describing a growth mindset, right? Like, you're making them think. It's not – you're not making them robotic and this is my way and I'm the coach and this is how we're going to win. Like, I'd rather teach them 5 ways, and depending on the team or any adjustments we need to make, we can, you know, throughout the season – now it's February – we can go and play 5 different ways. So it comes back to your identity, right? Like, when you put that outline together that we keep talking about at the beginning of the year, well, what are our habits? I love this kind of stuff. Well, the Florida Panthers or Dallas Stars, they run a 1-2-2 or a 2-1-2 or a left wing lock or a 1-1-3. Like, great. Like, it's not the forecheck, like the system or structure that's allowing you to have success. It's the habits inside. So if instead of me working on, you know, a 1-1-2 versus a 2-1-2, why don't I just do a ton of stick detail drills, a ton of tracking drills, a ton of angling drills, right? To teach the habits of what it, you know, what you need to have a successful forecheck. Well, now it doesn't matter what forecheck we do because our sticks are always on the ice. We're tracking guys, we're lifting sticks, we're stealing pucks, right? We've got our deer tied on a rope and we're squeezing and, you know, you can throw any other lingo that comes into, you know, each part of the game, but now they know that lingo, right? So yeah. like it's, that's what it is to me. It always goes back to the habits, and now you can play any way you want. Same thing with neutral zone transition. Like, I'm having a brain fart right now of his name. Hardy talked about him the other day, the Finnish coach that was at his camp.
Yeah, Tommy.
Tommy, unbelievable. And I thought you were going to bring this up in the podcast with Ryan, but remember we were sitting at that little barbecue and Tommy was talking about rhythms.
Yes, that was awesome.
In Finland, this is great, Jeff, listen to this. So in Finland, you know, say they were talking about neutral zone transition since we're on the play fast topic. They would play, you know, you'll love this, Jeff. Say they were playing techno music. So the rhythm was really fast. So right when there's a turnover, we're throwing it quick up to the weak side right away or hitting the center, like quick up. Everything's fast. Then they say they slowed it down, right? It's an old school country song. I'm just making stuff up, right? Well, now it's bring it back, D to D, you know, hinge it back to the D, hit the center. Like now you're in a slow rhythm, right? And they would play music as they're practicing. And as the music changed, their options changed. That's outside the box to me.
That was awesome.
So wait, he would put music on and not say what to do and they had to read the rhythm? Or would he tell them?
Yeah, they had to read it. I mean, that's what it sounded like. He was telling us the story.
Wow.
But he had a plan. Like, he educated them on what we're doing. And, you know, like, I mean, they're kids, like U-20s, but, like, I think that's pretty cool.
That's
you know, just to get them thinking outside the box. So, but that's, to Toph, to your point, like, you know, that's what you're asking is, like, how do we get them to think outside the box? How do we throw different things at them? Like, that's what you got to do. You know, you make it fun for them, even for pros or mites, like make it fun for them, you know, and everything's got to be about, you know, competition, right? Just to get them juiced. So.
No, I love what you just said. When you said, so say trying to work on the forecheck, instead of actually doing the forecheck, let's do drills where you're working on angles and stick pressure and stuff like that. So do you always think like, okay, this is our, I'll call it structure because I don't like the word system. This is our structure. These are the skills that we need to have our guys be competent at. And so you regress and then you make up drills to work on like each specific skill or, as you said, blended the skills together to be good at the forecheck. Is that how you think like when you're making a drill for that day?
For sure. Like even when the other day we were talking about, you know, I'm like manipulating the guy's feet and stuff. Like, say it's on a breakout, right? And I'm a left winger and I get the puck on the wall, right? And I've got a little bit of a gap between me and the D. So I get off the wall and get into dot lane. I cross over and then I go back. I'm trying to manipulate the D. I'm trying to buy space versus just going straight up the wall and I get angled off, right? So, like, I could do a drill where, you know, the coach passes to a winger, you know, and then the next guy in line is actually angling him, simulating F1 or F2, depending on what you're running. So I can work on stick detail and angling of a defensively a guy trying to break it up, offensively a guy's trying to manipulate your feet.
And would you tell them
before we even get to that? What's that?
I was just gonna say, would you tell them beforehand, okay guys, this drill we're working on stick pressure, getting off the wall, all that, and we're working on it because we are gonna use this in our 1-2-2 forecheck, or do you just kind of do it and then after tell them, or how do you approach trying to like bring that idea of what you're trying to work on into how you're implementing that into games?
So like for me, you know, it's probably different for the pros, but like anything below, instead of me just grabbing a bunch of Calgary Flames forecheck clips and just saying, hey, here's what the Flames do. Like they're in the NHL. They're the best forechecking team, or Vegas would be a better example. Like this is what we're going to do. Well, there's so many details that go into five guys and so many situations that can be created. Like how are these kids ever going to understand that? It'd be an hour long video session. They're checked out after minute four. So what you do is like, say, you know, you break it up. Like say there one day is, you know, one day you're just going to work on F1 angling or F2 stepping or, you know, whatever you're running. Right. So like, you're going to break it up. Like in this situation, offensively, you're getting a breakout pass. you're trying to manipulate the defender's feet because the first forechecker is coming after you. Defensively, you're the first forechecker. Here's what you're trying to take away. You're trying to take away him going back, you know, to the weak side or going back D to D, whatever it is, right? So, like, you're not trying to break up the play or blow this guy up. You're just trying to steer him into a more difficult situation. So it's not even going to look like you made this massive impact on the play, but because of your angle and where you place your stick, F2 looks like a rock star because he's going to anticipate, he's going to step up when the D passes it up the wall or the winger, and now we're going to break it up. But if you take a poor angle or go and try and hit him with your stick in the air instead of on the ice, even if you do blow the guy up, he still made the play, and we weren't successful in breaking it up on the forecheck. Now they're in on a clean entry.
You know, totally makes sense.
Yeah, like that. I'm trying to like give you the visual of like what's in my brain, but like you have to break it down for him, and like at every level, and like for a 12-year-old, he might not know what you're talking about, like in the video session or whatever. But when he does it on the ice day after day, he's unconsciously gonna learn. You know, he's just building up the myelin in his brain that like this is what I do. When I get the puck on the wall, I get off the wall.
I mean, that's what you said.
The wall, it gives you, yeah, it just gives you such a better, you could do that in flow drills, any type of flow drill you can add habits or concepts in, you know, just some random shooting drill. Like, hey, you know, every random shooting drill we do, the guy goes right down the middle of the ice and shoots from the hash marks. When do you get that shot in the game? And your goalie's not getting any better because he doesn't see that shot a lot in the game. Right. So like maybe it is down the wall and you delay, you know, do a 1 foot cut to the middle and now you're shooting laterally. Well, what are you simulating? There's a bad gap by the D. He backed up and didn't take you at the blue. So instead of you skating straight down the wall, you cut, somebody else drove the net, you open something up. So now we're teaching entry concepts. Well, it's one guy in a flow drill and you're teaching an entry concept or adding a skill. Well, now it's a two-man flow drill. Now we're going to cross and drop. We're going to chip the space. We're going to make a play through the triangle to the middle driver. You know, what are his options? There's a million different situations, but they should be created on the type of situations that you want to create as a team per your identity. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. But so here's a question then to that, because I'm dealing with this right now and I'm trying to figure out ways to always make them do those correct habits. And Toph, maybe this one, I mean, it's for both of you guys, obviously, but it's like, so, you know, we're doing a shooting drill. I don't want the kids coming in, setting their feet, getting to the middle, like you just said, always, like sometimes you got to practice shooting from outside or whatever. So say that multiple guys, they're not doing those little habits. They're not, you know, shooting in stride, or they're not changing the angle of the puck right before they shoot. And they're kind of just like, I don't want to say going through the motions, because I have guys that are trying hard, but it's like they're not thinking while they're doing it. They're just doing it. Do I tell the head coach, hey, you should blow the whistle and bag skate them, because this is the third drill in a row that they're not thinking why they're doing it? Or like, how do you suggest coaches get through to guys that, hey, we have to focus on these little tiny habits? You need to change the puck where it's placed right before you shoot it, just like Austin Matthews does. Like, he always pulls or he pushes, like you talked about in the first podcast we did with you. If they're not doing that, how do we get players to want to do that?
Well, it's for me.
You would know your group.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Nar.
I was just going to say, you would know your group, right? So based on the group, like, you know, do you need to light them up? Do you need to be their buddy? Do you need to have a heart to heart? Like, you know, did you play the night before and they're kind of checked out and it's kind of a nothing day? Do you want it to not be a nothing day and you want them to work that day, so you better get them going? I would just blow the whistle and calmly bring them in and say, hey, guys, like, listen, I just read my coaching book for dummies yesterday and I'm feeling really smart today. We're not just doing this drill to do it. There's a purpose behind it. And although it may seem simple and it's a warm-up drill for the goalies and to get you guys going, like every time you shoot, you're going to look, pass, and then shoot. So it's a no-look shot. Every time you shoot, you're going to pump fake or you're going to push or pull or whatever the small minor detail is, like Toph said, just to get them thinking. But like, we're doing this for a reason. And then you can lead it back to a scenario in the game that, hey, Johnny, when you had that 2-on-1 the other day and you put your head down on the ice and you buried it into his chest, this is why we're doing this. I want to help you, Johnny. I want you to put it under the bar for the 15 NCAA scouts who are in the building, or you're 8 years old. I want you to put it under the bar for mom and dad and grandma and grandpa who just flew in from Florida on Christmas break to see a play. so that your afternoon lunch is that much better. Like, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a purpose for everything. If you're not process or purpose driven, like, you don't have a chance. So.
Well, I think
that's on the coach. That's on the coach. Like, if you're just like, you're just barking out orders all the time, which most do, like, that's when players are like, what's he talking about? But if you're always if you've already shown them video on changing the angle of the puck or shot deception or whatever, and they know the lingo that you're preaching on, right? You got to do a push shot and stride or whatever your lingo is. They know that. So it's an easy fix. It's just like when we're growing up. Hey, we're doing the Wisconsin drill. All right, perfect. Everyone knows where to go. Well, coaches have their own language. Like, that's a Babcock thing, right? But it's not. It's every coach. It's every teacher. Right? They have their own language. So, like, when you say something, it triggers, some type of buzzword that should get your brain going that, this is what he means. And if they don't know, you should be building an environment where they're asking questions to figure it out.
Yeah, I like it. I think the other thing, too, yeah. Jeff, and this is something that I learned. Coach Schaefer at Cornell was really, really good at this. And that's, like, as a coach, being a hawk on the ice. So you're looking at it. Right? Like, because as most of us do when we're out there in youth practices, especially, you're blowing whistles and you're not necessarily, watching for all that thing all the time. And you have to be consistent. Like, if you want players to develop habits, you have to be consistent in your feedback as a coach. Because if you're not, then they're not going to be consistent in what they're doing. So if, you're talking about a drill and talking about, let's say, changing the shot angle, like, you're watching every player. And if they don't change the shot angle, you got to let them know. You have to let them know. Because if you don't, then where's the correction? Like, there isn't one. And that's something I learned from Coach Schaefer. Like, he was unbelievable at that. Like, nothing got away from him in practice. Like, legitimately, he could, if he wanted to, blow the whistle, like, after every rep of every drill. And he did. He made us better coaches because we had to be watching and be engaged all practice to look at things and correct guys and praise guys when they did it right all the time. Like, that consistent feedback for any coach to a player, I think, is so, so, so important. And if you want the guys to develop consistent habits, you have to be consistent with your feedback as a coach.
That's awesome, Toph. One of the best things that you said is pumping their tires when they do it right, because that's what makes them believe, right? If you're always cutting them down, it's not going to work. But if you praise them when they do it the right way, that's what gets them going.
Right, like when you guys are talking about your video sessions with Hastings, like when he singled you out for doing good stick pressure, like how good did that feel, right? Like, you probably thought you were on freaking top of the world.
Oh, I can remember the positive video session and the negative video session like it was yesterday, of exactly what he said to me, 100%, both ways. So.
Yeah, what's really funny right now, Nar, is the fact that Jeff is talking and he forgot that he's on mute right now. So I have no idea. I can see his now he's laughing.
Kid's back. Sorry, I had to sneeze. Kid's back. That's so true, though, because obviously when I was younger, I had to learn, and he's what helped me be good. But it was just every video session, I knew I was going to do something bad because I was learning and getting better, and he was making me better. But that, if it was 10 poor clips that were my fault, I was doing things wrong. But then he showed one good clip, cloud nine, on a high for the rest of the week. And I strived for his approval. I was like looking for daddy's approval, but when I would get it was unbelievable. And he did a good enough job with me personally, like his ratio of when to show me good things, like it made a high impact when he would show them. And so, yeah, you're totally right. You have to not just give the negative, you have to give the positive as well.
For sure. Well, hey, and one more thing when it comes to what we're talking about with identity too. And I think this is really important. And Nar, you brought it up earlier, and Jeff, you brought it up too. I've never heard of any coach that didn't want part of their identity to be, we want to be a competitive team, like a really, really competitive team, right? So how would you guys go about developing that mentality in a practice? Because I'm a big believer that competition is a habit as well. Compete level is a habit. It's not something you can either have or don't have. You have it on a spectrum. You can be more competitive or less competitive. You're either... You know what I mean? So how would you guys develop that in your team kind of, I don't want to say structure, but in your team identity?
Take it, Mr. Red Wing.
I'm just talking out loud, like on the spot, but like, I don't know, keep it fun. Like there's, you know, there's two ways to get them to compete. Like you can basically make them fear you, or a threat of like, hey, if you don't do this, you're going to skate. Right. Or you're going to run the stairs or whatever. If you do this and it's a forwards versus D, and you know, you do that 2-on-0, 2-on-1, 3-on-2 drill, and like, you know, the forward's got to score 6 goals or whatever. And if they don't or do, you know, now it's more about like the haggling back and forth, like in the fun of the hockey world. But like, hey, the D have to untie the forward skates if they lose, or what, you know, whatever. Right. But on the ice, they're competing. They could care less if they're untying skates or not. It's just the thought process of I want to win. So everything's a game, right? And then obviously battle drills, like, you know, like, but you can create battle drills inside of situations. If we want to outnumber the puck in our defensive zone and break it out within the first 7 seconds, well, we're going to do a drill where it starts with a one-on-one battle, but, you know, it's like one whistle and then a quick whistle right after. And we're teaching the second guy to sprint in there and strip the puck from him. You know, then the offensive guy's got to go against two people and he's competing to protect it. Well, now if the offensive guy feels comfortable against two people, when he goes in the game and there's only one on him, he has all the confidence in the world. Right. And defensively, like it's almost like a wolf pack mentality. Like we're coming at you in the D zone. This is our, you know, this is how hard we're going to go and how we're going to compete. We're going to strip you and take it away right away. Right. So again, it all comes through drills, through the education of video, you know, and then just your lingo that like, this is what we're doing and why. But at the end of the day, like your whole team is watching that 1-on-1 or 2-on-2 battle. And when you get knocked on your butt consistently, like, because you're not working, you're not competing, like now you're not in the crew, man. Like you, like, especially at junior hockey and above, like you need to survive. Like, so that was one of the biggest things with me with Hastings is like, he taught me how to work to where you're really, really uncomfortable, like really uncomfortable. And then the game should be easier. We were doing battle drills and pregame skate. It might've been too much, but like guys were getting in fights cause they were so competitive in pregame skate. So.
Yeah. I absolutely love what you just said. And I mean, I think that there's just from my own personal experience as a coach, and obviously I have way more as a player. For me, when I was a player, I was always kind of looked at as a leader and always, you know, I liked being a leader, relished being a leader and tried to bring energy. And something that I did, and I didn't do it when I was younger so much because I was afraid to be myself. But as I got older, once I went over to Europe and I was in more of like always a leadership role and a top line role type of guy, I would make it so that whenever the coach said, you know, like white versus blue, if the team was split, or forward versus D, I would immediately, whatever team I was on, I would scream at the other group. So if I was wearing a white jersey, I would literally yell like, F you blue, we're going to kill you. And I'd get the boys like have something invested where then pride's on the line. And I did it for a couple reasons. One was I knew that if I got scored on when I was out there after I was chirping the other, you know, the white team or whatever, that I was going to get it. They were going to all give it to me. So that, it yeah. raised my level higher because I was like, all right, I set out a challenge. It also raised my whole team because it's the same thing. They're like, well, Vex is going to be out there, you know, talking shit to the whole other team. Like we got to go get going so that we win this game. And then it fostered like energy and practice. Everyone wanted to compete then because something was on the line and it was pride. And then as a coach, I like doing the things what you said, you know, like if the D men lose, you got to untie the forward skates, or, you know, yeah. If you win, coaches are going to buy you all a Gatorade. It just puts something on the line where it fosters that love of competing. And like you said with Hastings, you know, the more you compete, the more you're going to bring that into a game.
And then you need to have it as a player. Like coaches are wondering all the time, how do I get this guy to be more competitive? Like, yeah, you can help, but like it's got to be in the kid too, or the man. Yeah. Right. So yeah. Like power play penalty kill was always like a fun, like, battle back and forth verbally, right? Like the kill wanted to, you know, not let you score, a power play wants to score and whoop it up, like in practice, whatever. Well, for me, you're gonna laugh, every time I wasn't on the power play and I was on the PK, and I'm not a PK guy, that just means I wasn't in the power play in practice. I was the best freaking PK guy in the world, because my competitive nature is I want our team to win and I want the best for my teammates, but I want that spot. You know, sometimes you get it and sometimes you don't. But, like, no chance. Like, hey, so-and-so's in my – Lovecchio's in my one-timer spot on the half wall. I'm standing by this guy. I'm making sure he misses the net. I'm chirping him. I'm whacking him. He's not getting one shot off. And the second, like, he starts getting frustrated or whatever, like, the second he doesn't do well, I'm taking that spot and I'm never leaving. And then when I get that spot, now I'm on the other side of it. Like, I'm scoring in practice. I feel like I was never, like, an elite player. Like, so, like, you always had to fight for that ice time. And, like, man, like, in juniors, like, Mark Carlson, too, in Cedar Rapids, but, like, you earned your ice time every single day in practice. You didn't have a choice to compete or not compete. And if you're a superstar who could go through the motions and still be that good, where you didn't have to earn it in practice, well, shame on you, because imagine if you worked like you did and you're a superstar.
Thank you.
You know, how good could you be?
And right? Just so, like, because you're good don't today. Don't get comfortable. Just because you're – yeah, don't get comfortable. Just because you're good today at 16, if you stop working – you stop being good. Doesn't mean you're good. So you shouldn't be, if you're the best on your team, the best in the league, whatever, it's 16, 17, I don't care, AHL, whatever. You're not working to be just that good. You're working to be better tomorrow. You're working to be better every day so that next year at the higher level, you're good. You just can't get satisfied.
Okay, this is a good point here, and I want to bring something up too because we're talking about it. So for all the youth coaches that are listening to this right now, you know, we're talking about having to earn your spots. So you youth coaches that are in peewees that are playing two lines and your third line never plays, okay, you are doing a huge disservice to the best players on your team. An absolutely huge disservice because they don't know what it means to have to earn the ice time. They're going out there because they're probably going to score or whatever because they're the best player on the team. Well, guess what? When you get to the higher levels, you're probably not going to be the best player on the team. So you better learn how to earn it, right? So, you know, when you talk about – we talked about this the last time you were on the podcast, Nar, like, you got to earn your keep. You got to earn your ice time. So the whole, like, every line should play the same amount. No, we don't necessarily agree with that, but we don't necessarily agree with the top two lines playing all the time because you're not teaching the kids that, hey, like, in a shift, if you're not working hard, or in a drill, if you're not working hard, there's consequences for that. And if you don't learn that, like, once they get to the higher levels, they're going to be, you know, punched right in the gut and they're not going to know how to handle that. So for the youth coaches out there that are just playing the top lines and they're never putting out the third line or, you know, they're giving their top guys carte blanche, you're doing them a disservice. And stop it. I don't know if you guys agree with that.
No.
All day long. Yeah. Here's the problem, though. Like, it's not that every parent's horrible, every coach. Like, it's not a bashing thing. Like, we're trying to – that's what we're trying to do with the Hockey Think Tank is provide solutions. But, like, then you got to go sit mom and dad down. And if they do it the right way, like, after you sit the best player because he's not competing and you're a coach that actually does it the right way, and you say, hey, guys, like, your kid's really special. Like, he's a really good player. He's only 14. I'm trying to teach him to be better. Like, because at some point he's going to be challenged if he makes the development team or goes to the Ontario Hockey League. Like, as a 16-year-old, like, he's not going to be able to do this. So I want to make him better for tomorrow. I'm going to challenge him today. Like, but, like, communicate. That's another thing. Like, communication is massive. But at least you have a plan versus, you know, something came up and my emotions got the best of me. And now I punished a 14-year-old third liner or first liner or whatever. Like, every choice you make has to have purpose. That's just an intelligent, you know, human being, right? So I got a quote for you, Tolf, that I put on Twitter a little bit back in the day. But I came up with this myself. I'm proud of it. And I'll kind of expand on it, but it goes into your, you know, comments about purpose and passion. It just says, when you're passionate about your purpose in life, everyone cheers you on. When you're obsessed about a purpose, they think you are crazy. But if no one thinks you're crazy, you aren't operating to the outer limits of your potential. So my whole thought process behind that quote is that every great hockey, we'll just talk about hockey, not business or family or whatever, but like every great hockey player, coach, whatever, they're friggin' obsessed. Absolutely obsessed. Obsessed with being the best, obsessed with winning, obsessed with the process, obsessed with whatever gets them going. Right? You can have a passion for fantasy football, right? Like, and an obsession for, you know, an obsession for gambling may be a bad obsession, an obsession for whatever, right? These guys are absolutely obsessed. If you want to play at the highest level, you have to be obsessed. And if you're good enough to play at a high level, say you play Division I college hockey and you're not obsessed, you just play to play. Like, imagine if you were obsessed.
Yeah.
You know, like, but in life, you got to be obsessed with something. Be obsessed with your family. Be obsessed with your job or giving back to the community, whatever it is. Like, what's your why? Like, what type of impact are you having? Why are you here?
I mean,
right?
I,
like, there's got to be something. If it's just going through the motions, you're wasting your time.
Does that, like, thought process not remind you what Hastings always used to say? And I'm pretty sure I've said it on this podcast before, but if you remember, he used to always say, you don't want to be the guy sitting at a bar with your friends at 35 years old and looking back and being like, man, and when I was in juniors, if I only would have, you know, tried harder in practice, if I only would have tried to expand my skill set, if I only would have stretched at night, if I would have watched more video. And that comes to, like, being obsessed. If it's something you love, if it's something you love, if it's something you want to be good at, like, you have to be obsessed and you have to constantly be working at it, because if you're not, and if you don't do those things, you are going to look back and regret things. And there's nothing worse than that.
For sure.
All right. So
for sure.
Nard, do you have, how much time do you have?
I got like 5-10 minutes.
Okay. So let's get into this real quick. This might be a conversation for a different day, but we'll give it a shot here, because I think this goes into what we talked about and what I wanted to talk about at the beginning. And that is, you know, when you're talking about development, and, you know, I had a long car ride home yesterday, so I got to thinking about this a lot from Vermont after doing some team building with St. Michael's College up there. And I was just like, why are the best the best? And how do you get the most out of people and the most out of kids, specifically in the youth hockey world? And, you know, I think a lot of what we talk about and a lot of the verbiage out there talks about, you know, skill development, right? Like, but at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, and I was thinking about this yesterday, I think there's three different kinds of developments that you need to be able to get to where you want to go. And one is obviously skill development. If you want to, you know, make the NHL or college hockey or whatever it may be, whatever you aspire to do, you have to have the necessary skills, right? The hockey sense, you have to have the skating, the shooting, the passing skills, all that kind of stuff. That's number one. And that's probably what is talked about the most. That's what coaches focus on the most in their practices and stuff like that. So that's necessary. But number two, you have to have passion development, right? So what are you doing as a coach to develop passion in a game? Because what we're talking about, if you want to get to where you want to go, you have to be obsessed. Like, you have to be extremely, extremely passionate and curious and want to get better on a day-to-day basis. Like, I don't know very many people that make it and get their dreams who are not passionate beyond belief to be obsessed with what they're doing. So what are we doing to develop that passion into kids? Because first of all, you have to have the necessary skills. Second of all, you have to have the passion. So what are we doing to be able to develop that passion? And third, I think there needs to be an environmental development as well. So what kind of environment are we putting people into to allow them to become to allow them to have number one and number two, right? To have the necessary skills to make it and to have the necessary passion to make it, right? So it's not just about skill development. It's about passion development and it's about environmental development as well. So, like, what do you guys think about that? Do you have thoughts? I just wanted to throw that out there as something that I was thinking about on the car ride home yesterday.
I think it's unbelievable. I think you're bang on. I don't know if anyone's doing that. I've never heard that lingo. It makes sense. Like, and I would say anyone that develops passion for the game has just had or passion for anything has just had a teacher, a coach, a parent, a sibling, a family, you know, family member, whatever, that, got them interested in, you know, in hockey, in video games, in, you know, sports, whatever, academics, like, somebody got you interested in that, you know, and you just took off with it. But is anyone teaching that, or is that in the front of their mind? I don't know anybody. I think that just comes out of people. If you're a passionate person and that rubs off on, you know, the kids that you're coaching, or if you're a passionate third grade math teacher, you know, you make math fun and make these kids love it. They see that you know, you care about it, and you know, that, that drives them too, you know?
Yeah. I think that what you guys were both just saying, like, it kind of one led into the other. Like, if you as the coach are obsessed and you care so much and you are passionate right away as a player, you feed off that, you see that, you read that, and then it becomes part of the team identity because the coach is that way. So it kind of like everything rolls downhill. I mean, I know this doesn't have to do with hockey, but I still remember sophomore year of high school. I was going to high school in Chicago, actually same school as Toph, living with him. And the first day of biology class, my science teacher, like, ball of energy, stood on top of the desk and starts like singing. And like, this guy was just so passionate about teaching, but I looked forward to going to that class because I knew that he was going to have something fun and he cared. And I still remember that guy. I still remember what he looks like. I don't remember his name because I've been hitting the head a lot. But I remember wanting to like be in that class and be around that environment. And I liked science that year. And I think that the reason that my personally, you know, I always use myself because I know how I do things and when it works, when it doesn't, with my training company, I'm so passionate about making guys better in the gym, which will help them, you know, in a specific way on the ice, that I think the kids really respond to it because they know how much I care about them and how much I believe in it. And I think that
for sure,
they just see that and then they get excited.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's the biggest thing. Like we talked about Hastings, like they know you care.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think, I don't know how you would go about, like, if you were going to write an outline, okay, this is what we need to do to create passion in this environment. I don't really know if there is one of those, Toph, but I do know that, like, if the leader is passionate, I think that, you know, shit rolls downhill or positive stuff goes down and disseminates into all the workers, all the players. So I think that the coach has to be super passionate. Your leaders have to be super passionate. And again, then you start creating games and environments where passion is there. But I mean, if you got a course you're going to give to teach people to create passion environments, I'll sign up, buddy. Is that up the next one on the hockeythinktank.com?
Yeah, we'll get back to that for sure. But I mean, we even talked about it before we came on air, right? Like how important mentorship is. And if you have a good person that's, you know, not telling you what to do, but leading you along the right path and letting you make the decisions on what you want to do, I think that's, you know, that's amazing. You know, like I look at my dad. You know, my dad was a hockey player. My dad was a hockey coach. So when I was younger, even as like, you know, a 6-year-old, I was going out with their peewee practices. And it was just fun to be around the older guys. And the older guys liked when I was out there and they would play with me and they would laugh with me and joke with me. And, you know, those kinds of things are just like absolutely invaluable, you know, just putting a net in the driveway. And you know, playing with my dad in the driveway or in the basement, just like kind of like I was Wayne Gretzky and he was Mario Lemieux and we were just kind of having fun playing for the Stanley Cup. You know, like I remember those days that's why I think, at least in my own personal experience, I'm really, really passionate about the game is just because from an early age, you know, my dad just put me in an environment where I learned to love it. It wasn't like you have to do this, you have to do this. But hey, Toph, you want to come and skate with my? It's not Toph. You're coming to skate with my team. Hey, Toph, you want to come skate with my team? Oh, yeah, let's do it. And if I said no for whatever reason, okay, then I would stay at home with mom. You know, like I just think that it's. I would love to get into this in another day. Nara, I know you got a job that you got to get to and stuff, but maybe we can get this in another day. Get you on here again, and we'll talk a lot about this.
That'd be great because I got a lot of thoughts. It's crazy, like. I don't know if I've ever said this out loud, but like, I'm just thinking about my hockey career as you guys are talking and different experiences. And like I made the decision to stop playing. I won't call it retire because I won't give my career that much credit in minor pro, but to stop playing because I wanted more. But you know what? Like, it was such an easy decision because my passion for the game as a player at that time, and like, bear with me here because I don't want to come off the wrong way or act like I'm talking about other people, but like my last year in pro hockey, it was an absolute joke. Actually, and again, bear with me, I don't care anymore. Like my whole minor pro experience was an absolute joke. And there was I got worse, like, and on me, my habits got worse because I wasn't challenged like Mark Carlson challenged me or Mike Hastings or Todd Johnson, my high school coach, or Red Berenson. I got better coaching in high school hockey than at the minor pro level. And coaches I played for coached in the NHL. and that's not me bashing those guys, but like, there's no passion because we weren't prepared. I didn't know what we were doing. We barely, like, you barely watch video or whatever, you know? So like, it was always trying to, if I'm saying I lost my passion, like, it was, how do you show up at a rink that's 75 years old and you're not, and I totally sound like a player right now, like, you're not treated a certain way or, you know, whatever, but like, what drives you? Like, we're all playing the game at that time. Like, you're not playing it for money, right? Even though you're only making a little bit, like, playing it because you love the game. Well, like, what's fun about, you know, like, coming to practice without a plan or not competing or not being prepped? Like, because I'm competitive, and when the games come, like, you just drop the puck and you're going to play at the pro level? Like, no chance.
Yeah.
So that's not to go on a rant, but yeah.
Well, Gnar, because we've had this question before from our mailbag episode. So looking back now, obviously it was hard when you're in the situation, but looking back now, knowing what you know, it doesn't matter if you're a kid, if you're a junior player, college, pro, because I was in this in pro in Europe once or twice. If you're in one of those situations where maybe you think the coaching staff doesn't care, you know, whatever, things aren't going well with the team, things aren't going right, what do you need to do as an individual to make it so that you're getting better every day? Like, what could you have done better, do you think, now looking back, to get yourself to a place where you are getting better?
Bad question for me. At the minor pro level at 26, it was cashing my chips, and I didn't have many left.
Yeah. That's,
you know what I'm saying? Oh, I could have worked my butt off in the gym, and I was 26 years old. Like, I could have done this for what? To play a year in the American League, maybe, like, as a max out? Like, for what? So that's why I decided to stop and build my business, because I can control it. I want to be in control of my own destiny. That's my answer. If I'm going to succeed or fail, I'm going to do it.
All right. Well, let's teach something then to the people. Pretend that you weren't in a situation where you knew your career was going to be done at the end of the year. Pretend you're, you know, still trying to climb the ladder of the pro ranks or college or juniors or whatever. What would you say to that man, woman, whatever, boy, girl, that is in a, you know, maybe not the best situation? How do they get themselves into a better place mentally to get better?
I can fill in on this one a little bit, because Gnar, I had a really similar experience to you in my last year of pro, and a little bit different in the sense that like, we had no team chemistry or team culture on our team. Like, we had some older guys who had cashed it in that really didn't give a crap. We were losing and they didn't care that we were losing. And as competitive people, you know, that just that freaking absolutely fires you up. So what I did, and honestly, is, you know, Sean Muncy, who you guys both know, he was my roommate, he was my teammate. We had a couple other guys that were just awesome guys, like Zach McClellan. You might know him, Gnar. He played at Michigan State.
You just named two unbelievable human beings.
Exactly.
Yeah, seriously.
Exactly. And Aaron Lee, you know, he played at Fairbanks. Another guy, Wiley Rogers, who's a beauty. So like, those guys were great guys. And what I did is I just spent a lot of time with those guys. Like, those guys picked my spirits up. Those guys were great teammates. Like, we hung out a lot away from the rink and practice in the locker room and all that kind of stuff. I just tried to distance myself away from the, let's call them the cancers of the group. And I was like, all right, what's going to make me happy here? And I knew what was going to make me happy and get my experience better was to just be around good people that made me feel good about myself and made me want to be there.
Yeah.
And so I just surrounded myself with those kinds of people, and it really helped. And I knew that was going to be my last year, because it was, I knew I was going to be going to Miami to be a graduate assistant the next year. So those guys were legitimately my saving grace, because it was the first time in my hockey career that I had ever not enjoyed coming to the rink. And that was really, really, really hard. And a lot of it was because, like, there was other guys on the team that I just didn't want to be around. And so I just put all my focus into the guys that I liked and the guys that I respected and the guys that I knew cared about me. And it really helped in my experience. So that's my answer to the question. I don't know if that's what other people would say, but that's how, you know, in my darkest days of hockey and not, you know, not wanting to come to the rink, which had never happened to me before, that was what I did.
I like that.
I like that.
So, all right, boys. Well, Gnar, you got a job to do, so we'll go let you do that job. We'll get back on here again. I think we got a little bit of a cliffhanger here that we ended it on. So leaving the listeners a little bit curious about maybe the next time we'll have you on. But appreciate you coming on, man. Always good to see you. Going to see you in person next week, so that'll be fun. And
can't wait.
We'll be talking to you soon, buddy.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Have a good one.
Love you, bro.
All right. See ya. Bye-bye.